for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome back to Global Reach, the show that helps your business compete in the international marketplace. Today, in fact, we're going to look at, as technology makes it easier for you to communicate with your customers, why do tech projects often fail to produce the very benefits that we expect or meet our return on investment expectations? This is a problem that companies across the globe share. Many expensive, much heralded technology projects never meet management's expectations. Instead of providing the promised solutions, projects that cost tens or hundreds of thousands of euros or yens, instead they provide headaches, and they can cost more thousands to fix. This has happened in nearly every company that I've worked for, and a lot of my clients tell me the same thing. So why? Well, this week's guest, executive coach Frank Faith, has some of the answers that may surprise you. I'll give you a hint. Basically, what we have here is a failure to communicate. Welcome to Global Reach, Frank.
Thank you, Tay. Thank you for inviting me to speak today. I appreciate it.
Let me tell you a little bit about our guest. He has more than 33 years of experience as a senior manager at the intersection of business and technology. Frank works with executives to support behaviors that improve technological innovation and improve overall implementation success, and most importantly, to ensure that the various stakeholders, management, operation, and technology providers learn how to communicate. Frank was one of my early listeners, and he sent me some feedback that was invaluable, so I know he's going to provide all of you listening to the show with approaches and techniques that whether you invest in technology or are a tech provider, you can have projects that really do provide the solutions you're looking for. Frank, we all agree that new technologies are at the heart of many organizational changes. So why do so many tech projects provide more headaches than solutions?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and let's start with that. As you kicked off the show, you talked about a failure to communicate, and that goes back, of course, that line is very familiar. It comes from the old movie, A Cool Hand Luke, where two characters in Cool Hand Luke says what we have here is a failure to communicate. And I think that's very prevalent in our industry today, and the lack of communication and the inability to be very clear about what one wants lies between the business managers themselves and the technology providers. And when I say communication, it's not that they don't talk to each other. It's that there are several problems with that conversation. One is that the conversation is discontinuous. By that I mean it will begin, they'll talk about the deliverables, and then it will end. There will be no ongoing discussion about what the deliverable is going to be. That's the first thing. Number two is the technology people themselves are so used to reacting to production codes, cost centers, charge codes, that they cannot develop a strong relationship with the business unless a program has already been allocated dollars. So you can't have the normal ongoing relationship with a business unless the project has been identified and the funding has already been taken care of.
Of course, and that's really too late, isn't it? By the time you've allocated the dollars, your expectations are already set.
They're already set, and furthermore, if every time you talk to somebody they're going to charge you, it doesn't warrant well for an ongoing conversation. You would rather have somebody who you can just pick up the phone and talk to them, as opposed to them saying, "Well, I can't talk yet because you don't have an approved project."
So the first thing is, tech providers shouldn't act like lawyers.
They should not act like lawyers when it comes to charging. That's right. You don't want to be nickeled and dimed when you're trying to think about a strategic solution.
So can you give us some examples, specific examples, mm-hmm. of where you've seen this problem occur?
Oh, certainly. I can give you three good examples. One was my own fault, which I can talk about. Many years ago, we were trying to develop a special kind of security environment for a large financial institution. Technology went ahead and developed it. We implemented it very successfully, and it was never used by the business.
Why?
We had a post-mortem, and we asked the same question. Why wasn't it used? And they said because there were operational processes which could have taken the place at about a third of the price of the technological solution. The fault there was that we had a solution we thought would fit the problem, but actually there was another solution that would have been more cost efficient. We didn't have the right conversation at the right level of depth. That's one example.
So you fit the problem, but not the company.
We fit the problem and not the company, and if we had just asked different questions and had a more robust conversation with the business, they would have said, we have another solution to the problem that doesn't require technology. It requires, it was actually a legal process, some legal input and some processes around approval of credit memorandums.
Can you give us another example?
Yeah, sure, absolutely, yes. The second example is another financial services company that I did work for. We had a new hire, and she came in from the publication industry, and she was very up on new technologies and new development cycles of how you develop software. She was very clear about how she wanted to develop her website, yet the technology people had a very structured, a very heavy development cycle, and the two of them did not see eye to eye. The technology people wanted to do it the old way, the new person wanted to do it the new way, and there was great animosity created between the two of them, which was exacerbated by the fact that one person was located in the New York metropolitan area, while the technology group was located in the Midwest. So there was no visual communication either, so they weren't able to sit down side by side and figure out the problem. So there was a deterioration in communication, which led to an unexplained expectation about what the project was going to be all about. And how that was resolved was by bringing them together into a room where they could say, here are my needs, and technology say, here's what we could provide, and how do you resolve it? Luckily, that project worked out well. It actually led to a $7 million increase in revenue in year one, but only because the parties were willing to sit down and talk to each other.
Okay.
The third example I can give, which is related to communication, is a large ERP vendor was installing an application into a Salesforce, also at a financial services institution, and the business people never received a complete sign-off of the technology project by the technologists themselves. So the technology people went down the path of developing new ideas and new approaches, but beyond that, they developed a new process for selling. That project was a $17 million failure, and it was replaced within the next year by Salesforce.com.
So why was that technical deliverable so way off the mark from the customer's perspective, from the business's perspective?
Two reasons. One were that the business had a way of doing business it did not want to change, number one. Number two is the technology that was selected by the technology group had not been fully approved by the business. It had been approved by people checking off boxes, but nobody on the business side delved deeply into the functionality, the procedures, the processes, and the impact it would have upon approximately 85 to 110 salespeople. And then thirdly, there was so much momentum and so much sales hype behind it that nobody was willing to back off and say, I don't think we should do this.
If the customer was unwilling to change, why didn't anybody mention this up front?
Nobody mentioned up front because there was not a good change management system in place. You know, change management is affected by all technologies. Anytime you put new technology in place, you change the way you do business. Change management has to be part of the initial process by which you develop technology. And that training, that kind of public relations, internal public relations, and those kinds of descriptions need to be part of the project from the get-go. When that's not there, people don't realize what the impact is going to be of them, of new functions and new features. And you develop this knowledge base and sort of this momentum behind it in which nobody wants to back off and say, I think it's the wrong thing.
With technology everywhere, this would seem to represent a really significant problem.
Oh, I think it is. You know, a recent survey done by TWC's Diamond Consulting said that only approximately 54% of projects come in on time and on budget.
Now,
which is half.
Yeah, that's
so that,
incredibly
that's a terrible waste of money and time.
Yeah, small percentage given the size of the investment that that represents,
yes,
and
mm-hmm,
time, right, and people resources.
Mm-hmm. So, that's right.
Now, this
and
has been going on as long as I've been working for companies. In fact, it seems to be getting worse. Why do you think the problem is so prevalent and so long-lasting?
A few reasons. One is I think it's been so long-lasting because we still have not figured out how to integrate technology planning into strategic planning.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have good relationships between the CIO and the CEO or the COO. We often don't have CIOs who think like business people. And we have CEOs and COOs who believe that technology should be relatively easy to implement. And while we all have iPads and iPhones and we have our Androids and we have our, our iPods, which make technology seem quite simple, in reality, corporate technology is much more complex than that because of security, because of the sheer scale upon which you have to develop it.
But if corporate technology is customized for the client,
right,
it should be a slam dunk to implement with all that expertise behind it. I mean, why can't they set up, you know, technology solutions that are a slam dunk for the company to implement?
Well, you asked the right question by using the right phrase. It's customized solutions. And that's the key difference between what's in the marketplace and what you develop in-house, which is customized. And customization requires the business people and the technology people to sit down side by side to write what is called business requirements. And the business requirements tell the technology people from the business perspective what I expect. It's not like buying shrink wrap software or downloading from the cloud. These are technology which have never been tested before. The technical pieces are tested. I mean, the languages, the hardware behind it, the infrastructure, that's been tested. But the actual coding, the actual thinking and formulas that go into the software, that's all new. That's all brand new stuff.
Hmm.
And that has to be tested rigorously.
Now, you've talked about the tech provider,
mm-hmm,
and we have management. Where does operations and corporate IT fit in?
Well, corporate IT has the responsibility of providing the infrastructure and the foundation for running the software. Those guys are in pretty good shape. They have their game pretty well figured out. The biggest problem today is energy consumption. How do I reduce energy consumption? So I think they're fine. But where operations comes in is they're at the middle. They're the ones who get squeezed because almost every technology project has an effect on operations. And unless you bring operations into the mix, just as we talked about bringing change management into the mix early, operations is the one who's going to identify the problems soonest because they're the ones that are going to be affected first by the implementation of the technology.
Huh.
So when you start a project, you want to have four parties involved. You want to have business involved, technology involved, HR/change management, and operations.
So then communications is the responsibility of all the stakeholders to address and fix the problem. Yes?
Yes,
no?
Yes, it is. All four parties have a responsibility. And the project manager who's running all those four areas has the responsibility of bringing those parties together on an ongoing basis, holding their feet to the fire to say that we have a problem here or we're having a success. Another way to improve the success of the project is to have small incremental deliverables.
Ah.
So the business can see whether or not we're proceeding along the path that they anticipate and that fits their needs.
So it seems so simple. Why doesn't everybody do it?
It's actually quite complicated because you get so many parties involved and you have the human interaction involved. You have people who speak the same language. We all speak, in this case, in the United States, we speak English, but they're talking about different terms. We use terms differently. The other problem that gets in the way is that the business tends not to write the business requirements. They tend to tell the technology groups what to do, and then the technology group writes the requirements, and the business doesn't have time to review them. So then the technology guys go out and develop what I would call half-baked requirements.
That's really interesting. Listen, we have to go to break now.
Okay.
When we come back,
fast.
I want you to tell me what you think a successful technology project looks
okay.
like. So we'll don't
do.
Go away. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
This is Global Reach.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel or listen on demand to our archived shows.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here speaking with Frank Faith, and we're talking about communications and technology and business strategy. Frank, before we went to break, you were about to tell me what you think a successful technology project looks like.
Sure. A successful technology project looks like this. First off, you integrate technology into strategic plans. So any plan that the corporation has, it has a large section that has been well considered, well documented, and explained in non-technical terms to the business. And you tie the technology to revenue and or expense targets. So technology is no longer about infrastructure. It's about enabling the business itself to become more successful, number one. Number two is you have to promote within the company an overall business strategy and roadmap. So you've developed the business strategy, you've developed the technology plans under the strategy. Now you have to put it out to everybody in the company so everybody's following the same lines and the same rules and the same guidelines that the rest of the technology and business people are following. It's very important that the IT leaders share an understanding of the strategy with their staff so the staffs know how to build, how to ask the right questions. And the third part is to really, even though we talk about the importance of delivering on time and delivering on budget, you need to look beyond that to make sure that you don't give short shrift to functionality just to make your end date. Mm. So that is accomplished by having frequent, some firms have weekly, some have bi-weekly meetings among the senior people responsible for delivering a project. So the three key points are integrate technology into strategic planning, ensure that everybody understands the strategy and where you're headed and the role of technology in it, and thirdly, deliver incrementally so that you make sure you deliver all of the functionality on time, on budget, and that it's the kind of delivery that the business is looking to accomplish.
Why don't the technology providers and businesses engage each other like this on a regular basis?
That's a great question, and there is no easy answer. I think the answers primarily have to do with, typically the technology people do not reach out. They tend to stay within their own boundaries. They're very, from an emotional IQ point of view, not to throw out that kind of language, from an emotional IQ and understanding people and relationships, they tend to be very insular. They tend to really be very creative around the use of technology, and they tend to be a little more introverted than the people on the business side. So they're very happy staying in their offices, staying in their cubicles, working on very, very neat technology, and they find the neatness to be so self-evident to themselves that it should be self-evident to the business.
So essentially, they're siloed.
Excuse me?
Essentially, they're siloed.
They've got the business silo and the tech silo. Yes. And then the business people are siloed, too, because they think by telling the business, telling the technology what I need, they will sort of divine from that what's required. And so, you know, unlike a good relationship between two people and two friends or a husband and wife, what you don't see in the technology business interface is ongoing discussion, as I said this before, an ongoing dialogue, and really an ability to raise doubt and to say, I think we're going in the wrong direction, or why are we doing this when something else is a possibility? So there's a lack of openness as well.
Okay, so it's essential that executives within the business, operations, technical units, the technology provider, all learn how to work together.
Yes.
You've given us some broad brush strokes, but if your solution or the solution to the problem that we've been talking about is to develop ongoing relationships and improve communication, exactly how do you do it? How do you create simple structures that would bring the parties together and ensure they all have skin in the game?
Right. Well, a few ways. You need a very good governance process around technology spending and strategic alignment that has to be formalized. And somebody who understands both sides, COO, CIO, or somebody who's really sharp at understanding the impact of technology and how to read businesses, somebody who can interpret what the business is saying in technology terms, they should head that group up. That's the first thing I would look at. The second thing I would look at is I would ensure that the business people and the technology groups all have within their goals, which means their compensation and their bonuses.
Yeah, always.
Always, exactly right, T. Always has skin in the game. And then number three is I would have frequent meetings whereby you cannot obtain funding for the next step of the process unless what you have delivered, what you have promised before has been successfully delivered.
I would also guess that top management has to make it very clear that they've bought into this and that their skin is also in the process.
Yes, and they need to relate that to their market position and their market share. They need to have the technology folks who tend not to be as aware of the economics of how do you make money in business say that unless this occurs, we might not be able to be competitor X in this marketplace. Or if we're even 3 weeks late, we lose the opportunity. Just think about Mattel. If Mattel was to get a new Barbie doll out late after Christmas, it's going to lose sales for the entire year.
And that's certainly happened before, not necessarily to Mattel, but
yes,
certainly to
right.
a number
yeah.
of providers who've missed the Christmas market.
That's right. You missed the Christmas market.
You missed the summer market.
You missed the whole year.
Right. Yeah. So it's
important that they talk, they set guidelines, and they have the same objectives, and they're shared objectives, and one fails, the other fails along with it. And one succeeds, the other succeeds as well.
You know, it always seems to me that operations is a stepchild. What can the technology provider do, what the other stakeholders do to make it a slam dunk to the operations department that has to run the stuff?
Well, you're absolutely right. They are a stepchild, and I'm just laughing because it happens all the time.
I have friends who are in operations, so I know whereof I speak.
Late night. And I've worked there, too, and the way to do that is to have somebody who's very strong at the top get all of the parties who are interested in the result in at the same time. Operations tends to be, from a relationship point of view, probably the most quiet of all of the groups, but they're the ones who are most affected by the technological decisions other than sometimes salespeople or accounting or finance. But unless they can get a seat at the table, just like technology has tried to get a seat at the business table, this problem will continue to happen. So people have to understand the relevance of operations compared to the relevance of other functions within the company. And operations, just like infrastructure, people forget about it unless there are problems.
But then you're also saying if it's a technology solution, in quotes, that impacts my sales force, I better put marketing and sales at the table.
If it's going to impact
finance and accounting, I better get them at the table as well.
Mm-hmm. Any involved party, any stakeholder must be at the table. So let's just say, for example, you are having a new marketing platform or a new web design. You would want business there. You would want technology there. You would want HR there for the change of manager that I've talked about before. And you would want the people in marketing who are developing the new website and who understand the needs of the customer.
Now, allowing
technology to develop in isolation is a surefire way to head towards disaster.
Yeah, and we've all seen it.
Yes, we have. We see it quite frequently. We even see it among some of the bigger software companies. You know, you look at, you know, Vista from Microsoft. I don't think they did a good job talking to customers there.
They certainly didn't.
Right.
Some of us have experienced.
Small companies as well as the largest companies.
Now, communication among the stakeholders,
mm-hmm.
getting everybody's skin in the game, getting
yeah.
people comfortable and thinking in the right direction and thinking about solving problems together and articulating mm-hmm. their needs and asking the right question, that doesn't happen necessarily organically within a company. How do you get people doing that? And you're an executive coach, so I assume mm-hmm. you have some real thoughts about that.
Yes.
Can you define what does an executive coach do?
What an executive coach would do is he or she would find out what are the primary problems that are preventing the effective implementation, deployment, and development of technology, first off. Number two, you would look at the stakeholders in that process and try to find out, given that you have a good understanding of the operational flow of decisions, where along the way decision-making is breaking down. It could be people are not making the right choices. There could be impediments in the corporate culture. There could be problems between the different parties in terms of the relationship management. And so what a coach would do, he or she would come in and identify where there is a lack of alignment and where there are points of view that differ from one to the other, called what we call blind spots.
How do you get the access and the clout to make that happen?
You are called in by one of two organizations. You are called in by HR, or you are called in by a senior person at the business level, the technology level, who says, listen, we are having a problem with this project because we are so far out of alignment, and I don't think it's a question of process. I think it's a question of my people just don't work well with the business, and can you help me solve that? And so it has to be brought in at a high level. It has to be somebody who is aware that there is indeed a problem and that they're willing to try to fix it. You can't fix a problem unless the constituents involved are willing also themselves to say, okay, I'm part of the problem and I want to change and I want to fix the problem.
We're going to go to break in about a little less than a minute. So tell me a little more, how do you actually start getting the parties together?
You get the parties together. You do it one of two ways. You can start off as a group effort and be very direct that, people, we have a problem with this project. This is what's going on. And we're here to identify how we as a team can work together to make it successful. That's one way of doing it. And number two is you can hire multiple coaches, one coach to work with the folks on the technology side, one on operations, and then one on the team leadership side. And
Siloed coaches?
You can have siloed coaches, but they would have to have the okay of the business's stakeholders to share information. Now, you would never share private information that you've obtained from the client or the person that's being coached, but you could identify common problems across those three areas and then use those in coaching the individuals. You could also create a team building exercise, share some of the output that you get from assessment tools like a Myers-Briggs or an emotional IQ test, emotional IQ assessment rather, and say, here's what I've learned, here's what we've learned, and here's what it means for you as a team.
Now, I want you to hold that thought.
Okay.
We've got to go to break now. When we come back, I want to continue with the process.
Okay.
Don't go away. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
I'll be here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. Are you an entrepreneur that wants to achieve more? Not just in it for profit, but to do work you find meaningful, that adds more value to more people in more ways? Listen for Be More, Achieve More, Inspiration for the Entrepreneurial Mind. With host Chris Cooper, you'll hear from successful achievers from around the world with the passion and experience to offer invaluable guidance. These people are making a difference and will help give you the motivation and insight to achieve more. Be More, Achieve More can be heard live Fridays at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. I'm here talking with Frank Faith about how an executive coach can help bring the various stakeholders in a business, management, operations, technology, plus the technology provider, bring them together to make sure that, in fact, when you're spending your thousands or tens of thousands on installing new technology, you're actually getting the solution that you're paying for, and you're going to realize the return on investment that you're looking for. Frank, what else does the process of executive coaching involve that will help actually make these technology projects come out the way everybody wants them to?
Okay. Primary among the answer to that question is better relationships between the individual parties. There tends to be a level of mistrust between the business folks and the technology people, driven by the lack of deliverables over time, the concern that I'm not getting the functionality that I expected, everything's more expensive than I wanted, and I feel nickel and dimed.
You know what? I had an ex-boss who used to say about any time we put in new technology, we assume it's going to work. Assume is a very dirty word.
Yes.
So how do we go from that
I know what that means.
to actually making sure that things are delivered, the function you need, somewhere near the time you expect it to be delivered?
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, I'm a true believer in incremental deliverables. you give people only what they're able to use at a point in time, and you see how that goes. If it is successful, then the organization should provide incremental funding for the next function or set of functions. I believe that the financial folks who are part of the IT governance process should be very much like Ebenezer Scrooge. They should not give out money unless the previous work has been successful.
So how much time do I need to invest in executive coaching itself? If I wanted to bring you or a trio of executive coaches on board, how much time do I need to invest in that piece of the process?
Yeah, it takes typically the executive coaching process is run 3 to 6 months. In a 3-month assignment, we would meet with the candidate, what they call the coachee, for want of a better term, for about 90 minutes every day for 3 months, and a 6-month engagement. It would be once a week for 4 weeks, and then it would taper off that. And within the first 3 months or so, we could be pretty effective at identifying the obstacles that are getting in the way of a better relationship, and we would do that through a set of assessment tools. So the minimum is 3 months, and then the maximum is 6 months.
What is something like that run?
Depending upon the industry, because rates do vary by industry.
Right.
But in financial services, a 3-month assignment would run about $12,000, and a 6-month assignment would run about $20,000.
On average, what do you save a company when they go through that process?
What you save a company is a few things. That's a great question. One is you save them employee turnover. We do know from everything that's been written over the past 20 years that the primary reason that people leave companies, perhaps in these economic times is not true, is that they're not happy with their manager. But also means they're not happy with the environment in which they work and they don't feel very effective. So we save the company employee turnover, and we increase the satisfaction of those employees who do remain, number one. And number two, by improving the relationship with the technology organization, rather between technology and the relationship organization and the business side, I believe that we can increase the ROI on projects. And if you just had if you went from the 54% that PwC report in terms of delivery on time and on function up to 60%, that 6 percentage points translates into tens of millions of dollars.
Yes, it does. All right, now I want to add another layer of complexity to all of this.
Okay, I can't wait.
We've been talking mostly about a company in one country.
Yeah.
Most of our listeners are doing business in 5 countries, 20 countries. I've had clients do business in 100 countries, and they need to get their people working together, and they do bring them together by one form of technology or another.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're adding the business culture of the client,
correct,
the business culture of the technology provider,
mm-hmm,
and all of those different national cultures, not just different languages,
right,
but the question of cultural expectations. We all grow up in cultures that gives us patterns of behavior that,
mm-hmm,
we take as the norm. They're subtle. We don't even know that those are, you know, culturally based behavior patterns. We don't think about them, but we expect people to behave and respond to what we do,
mm-hmm,
based on that upbringing. So how do you create good communication among not just the different business and technical cultures, but among the different national behavioral cultures?
Yeah. The way I would approach that, and the problem has been exacerbated by more offshoring and more onshoring, because we're dealing with people from very different cultures and we're dealing with a whole other layer of management.
Let's hold that. Let's stay within.
Exactly right. We'll get back to that. But
global company, what we used to call multinational corporation. Let's stay within our company first, then we can talk about offshoring.
Okay. In cases like that, what I would do is I would set up separate teams by region that operate along the same guidelines as the one in the home country that's driving the technology. So, for example, if it's originally being driven out of London, London would follow the patterns that we talked about in terms of establishing the integrated strategy, the time frame, the PR around it. And then that very senior person would have equivalent operations and teams in the other regions who work vertically. because I think that you understand best the culture you live in if you work in that culture. And those groups would then report into, on a very regular basis, into the senior project leader. And with our new ability through things like, you know, Cisco's telepresence and other electronic mechanisms, there's no reason why teams cannot speak to each other on a regular basis but still be distant from each other.
So
I think it'd be very difficult to manage an international project across all the nations without having representatives in each one of the regions.
Because very often those international projects, their purpose is to enable the regions or the countries to work with each other and to talk with each other.
That's correct. And you can have two kinds of projects. You can have a project that just stays within the region, and then you set up the structure we talked about within the region. But many times you have these large, you know, financial systems or HR systems or procurement systems that cut across all of the regions.
Exactly.
And that's where you need this more complex interregional execution and interregional governance board.
So this interregional governance board identifies the common problems and starts identifying the desired solutions and then the shared expectations for, or creating shared expectations for the solutions?
Exactly right, they would. And they would get agreement across the regions to make sure that we're trying to solve the business problem that is paramount to implementation of the business strategy. That's correct, yep.
And then once you did that, you would start bringing in the technology providers.
Before that, you would bring in the technology providers. My belief is that you want everybody at the table at the same time.
Okay.
Because
now
if you
mentioned
don't,
offshoring,
are out.
So going outside the company. Now, what's the impact of offshoring been on the relation between business, technology managers, technology providers? Because that's now we've got yet another business culture involved, as well as another national culture.
Yeah, right. We have another culture, and we have another layer of management.
Yep.
This might seem heretical, but I believe that offshoring and onshoring has dramatically increased the difficulty by which you manage a technology project. The reasons for that are primarily that in order to execute well, the developer of your program, the people who actually do the coding, have to have extremely accurate business requirements. And they have to have good business analysts. And as an industry, back in the 80s and 90s, we started cutting those people back. And so it has made it more difficult for companies to accurately state what they want the developers to build. So communication in the written form is more complicated, compounded by the fact that the people who are doing the development are not native English speakers. So there are a lot of nuances that could be missed. That's number two. I also think that in order to work with the folks in different countries where the offshoring is occurring, even the onshore folks, you need another management layer within the company. So you have what I call, remember the telephone game when you were a kid, you know, John would say to Jim, you know, Jimmy got a new bicycle. And by the time you end your discussion, 10 people down the road, it's like, you know, Sarah has a new game.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Playing telephone is major.
Yeah, that's right. Playing telephone is major. And I see that in companies that I work for. I see the message not only getting diluted, but totally transformed between what I've asked to have done and what actually gets done.
Absolutely.
I really think it would be great if somebody did an analysis about the effectiveness of offshoring and the complications around it.
We've got to go to break in a minute, but let's
okay.
just take it from, we've been talking big, big, and bigger. Now, how would this work if you're going to translate to work with a small or a medium-sized business? And I can give you about 45 seconds now, and then we'll pick it up when we come back.
I think it's much more simple. The people tend to be in the same organization locally. They tend to engage each other on a more informal basis. I think the kind of conversations around a water cooler are a good thing to have. And I just think the less complex it is, the easier it is to solve the problem.
Well, I'm going to leave you with one thought as we go to break. A lot of small businesses are virtual companies, and they're not co-located.
Okay, good point.
When we come back from break in a couple of minutes, Frank's going to talk about how the virtual company can realize its technology dreams.
Thank you.
business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. And Frank, the reason I asked you about virtual companies and about small businesses that are not co-located is that's basically what Global Reach SBI is. I work with companies and colleagues in Singapore and in Australia and in Mexico and in Belgium and in Portugal and in Poland. It goes on.
Wow.
So how do you work with a company like mine? We're small, but we are really spread out.
Yes, you are, and I think because of the size of the company and your investment budget around technology, that I would be more likely to buy purely off-the-shelf technology that requires no customization. And so then you don't run into the problem of what do I mean by this and why didn't that work. I would make your choice of technology selection as simple as possible. And the more senior the person for whom the technology is essential to having a successful business, I would say that that person, along with his or her colleagues, should make the very difficult choice of choosing the technology.
And is there a way to get us together so we can get in sync with how to use it properly and use it successfully?
Yes, I think through webinars, I think through things like telepresence where you have the ability. I think also through online manuals about why you're doing what you're doing, that would be helpful. And I think also an early note from the senior manager saying, we are doing this because. And before we go full bore, whole hog on this, I would like to have your input about what you think we need to do. So they don't see it as technology being imposed on them, but rather they've had a hand in selecting the technology.
Sounds good.
So, but I would keep it simple.
Our focus, I mean, we started out with what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Yes, ma'am.
And you've been talking all the way through about communication.
Mm-hmm.
What is optimal communication, in your opinion?
Optimal communication means that there is an easy, ongoing dialogue between all the parties involved, that there is mutual trust, mutual respect, and an ability to debate issues in a non-abrasive, non-disruptive way so that the best solution comes out.
That's really interesting. You know, we've been talking mostly about individual technology projects.
Mm-hmm.
But long-term, how do you integrate technology and the search for solutions and organizational change. How do you integrate that into strategic planning?
The strategic planning people need to change the way they go about developing plans, which is that a strategic plan is no longer just a budget or a financial plan. It talks about the market, it talks about conditions, it talks about competitive technology, and needs to bring in all those parties to develop the strategy, recognizing that there's more than one variable which makes up a strategy. There's a whole world of planning called scenario planning, in which you look at what could happen if, what happens if the Iranians cause the Straits of Hormuz to be closed, what happens to oil production, what happens if there's a dramatic change in government or a change in financial regulation. They need to take that kind of cataclysmic changes into account and do it in a way that says, if this happens, then this happens as well. But you need the input from everybody at the senior levels who has an understanding of the marketplace, so they can say, not only strategically should we do this, but this is the technology that leads to the strategy. And then you have to do a really great job of diligently portraying that to the organization and make it part of everybody's goals and make it part of everybody's understanding about why we're trying to do what we're trying to accomplish.
That's really an interesting, I think it's a really important exercise. Just parenthetically, I used to be the financial editor for the publication Business International.
Uh-huh.
They used to do currency forecasting. We had people who did technical forecasting for currencies, and then they'd bring me in to talk about, well, what about the cataclysmic things that might impact?
How about that, yeah.
What if Germany's biggest union goes on strike? What if...
Mm-hmm.
The French government changes. So that was my role in those exercises.
Yeah, those are fun jobs. You get to really think out of the box.
So really what you're saying, though, is companies need to create and share a multi-year roadmap for the overall business strategy that is
mm-hmm.
both the business design and the technology and bring the two together.
That's right. And the roadmap should not be sacrosanct. And by that I mean, if we learn along the way that we've made a mistake, the strategy should change. Because sometimes when you accomplish success through dead reckoning, you end up where you don't want to be.
Now, let's give really quickly
sure.
some checklists for our listeners. What are some three most important points that management can take away?
A few. One is that... technology leadership has never been more difficult nor more interesting. So we can't give up because these are great times technically. For years, business has not allowed technology to have a seat at its table. Now it's saying we need you because technology is driving the business more so than ever before. And that technology is no longer about the technology itself, but rather about anticipating and satisfying business needs and meeting those with technology solutions. So you no longer start off with saying, I have this neat technology, but rather, what is the business problem, and how do I apply a certain kind of technology to solve the business problem? So it's about business strategy. It's not about technology.
What are the three most important things that a technology provider needs to know to work with business and be able to provide solutions
mm-hmm.
that satisfy their that satisfy the customer's expectations?
Deep business knowledge, as deep as their business partners. One, they need to listen really, really well, and they need to come up with a solution that is not based upon technology, but upon functionality, which can be delivered through technology.
And listening itself is a skill. I was interested that you said that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember actually writing an article on the art of listening.
The act of listening is very critical.
How do you just 1 minute, how do you actively listen?
You actively listen by paying absolute attention to the person that who's talking to you. You clear your head of anything else that might be in there so you can participate in the conversation. You respond to what they've said. You can repeat what they've said to make sure that you've heard it correctly. And then you can show respect for the person by saying, I've heard you say this. This is how I interpret it. Is that the right way to do it? Is that the right way?
Okay.
So it's all about making that person the focus of your attention and of your thinking.
Last question in 30 seconds. You wrote a great blog article called Doing What Comes Naturally.
Yes, I did.
What did you mean by doing what comes naturally? And give us your website so our listeners can read it.
Yeah, well, I'll go to the website first. It's www.faith.com. I blog once a week. And by that, by doing what comes naturally, I really believe that each one of us has something we can be terrific at, and that doing what you're terrific at will make you happy. And being happy is the essence of what we should be as individuals. And for many of us, we're doing jobs that bring in the money, but they don't make us happy.
Frank, thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
and
Kay. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and I appreciate it.
F-A-E-T-H, Faith Consulting. Now, over the next couple of weeks, we'll be taking a look at a major initiative that American CEOs are taking on the campaign spending front and how that might affect your business. We're going to explore some hot issues on the payments front, and then we're going to do a deep dive into the global business and global politics of water. So please tune in next week, and please send your comments on this show and on our past shows, and send your ideas on what you'd like to hear for new shows to me at trr@globalreach-sbi.com. And if you missed any of our earlier shows, you can find links on my website, www.globalreach-sbi.com, or go to my host page, the Global Reach host page, at the Voice America, www.voiceamerica.com. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. This is your host, Tay Revez from Global Reach.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.